If you wanted an AI to code an entire video game for you tonight, your first instinct would probably be to pick the engine with the most tutorials on the internet.
Oh, absolutely. That's what everyone does.
Yeah, you would look at the massive mountains of training data out there for engines like Unity or Unreal, assume that more data equals a smarter AI, and just start building.
And you would fail miserably.
Completely. Because your intuition about how AI learns and builds in this context is just completely backward. Welcome back to the deep dive, everyone.
Thanks for having me again. And yeah, I mean, that is a tough pill to swallow, especially when you consider how many solo developers are looking at AI right now as like their ultimate co-pilot.
Totally. You probably had that moment, staring at your screen late at night thinking, I should build my own video game. But then the reality of learning all that complex syntax and logic hits you.
Right. The learning curve is steep.
So today we're looking at this fascinating set of AI field notes published in May 2026. And the author set out to answer a really practical question. If you want an AI to write, say, 95% of your game's code, which engine do you actually choose? Godot, Unity, or Unreal?
And the author's journey to answer that question, it basically systematically dismantles almost everything we think we know about AI and programming.
It really does, because the assumption is that AI just needs sheer volume of data to succeed, right?
Yeah.
But the twist here is that the engine with the most internet history is actually the worst possible choice.
Yeah, they refer to this initial mistake as the volume trap.
The volume trap, right?
Exactly. So to understand why total volume of training data doesn't equal quality for an AI model, the source contrasts two wildly different coding environments. The first one is an engine called Bevy.
Okay, Bevy. And that's written in Rust, right?
It is, yeah, it's written in Rust. And Rust has been, the most loved programming language for years now. So the amount of Rust code scraped into the training data of models like Claude or GPT must be astronomical.
Right. So theoretically, an AI should be an absolute master at it.
Well, it is a master, but it's a master at the Rust of the past. The issue with Bevy is its velocity. I mean, the maintainers ship a breaking API change roughly every 3 months.
Oh, wow. Every 3 months.
Yeah, the engine is evolving so fast that the underlying rules constantly shift. And when an AI generates code, it isn't reasoning in real time. It's relying on weights built from historical data.
So if you ask an AI to write a game in Bevy today, it's basically going to confidently generate this syntax that was perfect a year ago, but is now completely broken on the current compiler.
Exactly. The AI will hallucinate this beautifully formatted, grammatically flawless Rust code that simply will not run.
That sounds incredibly frustrating.
It is. The source actually details the experience of the developer behind a game called Architect of Ruin.
Okay.
They poured 6 entire weeks into trying to force an AI to build their game in Bevy.
Wait, really? 6 weeks?
6 weeks. They were just trapped in this perpetual cycle of fixing deprecated code. They eventually just abandoned the engine entirely just to escape the friction.
That is brutal. I mean, 6 weeks of fighting the tool that's supposed to be saving you time.
Right. But then the author pivots. They point to an environment called Pico 8, which feels like the absolute polar opposite of a sprawling Rust engine.
Yeah, Pico 8 is it's a hyper-constrained fantasy console, right? It intentionally mimics retro hardware limitations.
Exactly. You are restricted to 128 by 128 pixels, exactly 16 colors, and a strict 8,192 token limit for your entire code base.
Which is tiny. I mean, if the volume of data theory were true, Pico 8 should be an absolute disaster. It's a niche tool. There's infinitely less Lua code written for Pico 8 floating around the internet than there is standard Rust code.
Yet the result was flawless.
No way.
Flawless.
Yeah, a developer used Claude code to generate a completely bug-free Lua game for Pico 8 in a single session.
In one session.
One session. The human developer didn't have to manually touch a single line of the code. Okay, so the secret has to lie in those limitations, right? Like, because the Pico 8 API is so small and that token limit is strictly capped at 8,000, the AI doesn't have to guess about architecture.
Right.
The entire rulebook just fits cleanly inside the AI's context window.
That is the crucial mechanic at play here, yeah. An AI model thrives when there is zero ambiguity, when it can see the entire system, every variable, every function call simultaneously. It just doesn't hallucinate.
It understands the holistic state of the project.
Exactly.
It's kind of like comparing a genius chef who's forced to use a massive encyclopedic cookbook from 1990. Sure, there are a million recipes in there, but half the ingredients don't even exist anymore, versus a chef making a simple grilled cheese, but they have a perfectly accurate real-time recipe sitting right in front of them.
That's a great way to put it. For AI, the total volume of historical training data matters way less than freshness, stability, and total visibility.
Which naturally leads to the next phase of the author's experiment, I guess.
Yeah.
Because if a highly constrained, text-based environment is what AI needs to thrive, does that mean you, as a developer, are just trapped making tiny retro games forever?
Right. Or is there a modern ubiquitous equivalent?
And the answer they found is the browser. Web technologies are entirely text-based, highly standardized, and run on basically every device on the planet.
But I think a lot of developers, probably even you listening, carry this ingrained stigma about web games.
Yeah, there's definitely this fear of hitting a low ceiling. Like, you can build a fun prototype in TypeScript, but it's never really going to be viewed as a real game.
The author actually dissects that stigma. They argue that the web ceiling was actually two separate barriers, both of which have recently shattered.
Okay, what was the first one?
The first was the graphics ceiling. Historically, browser games were pretty clunky because JavaScript is single-threaded, meaning the browser can only do one thing at a time. So if it needs to clean up memory, a process called garbage collection, the whole game micro-stutters. Pushing Futorial 3D through that bottleneck was just nearly impossible.
So when the source points to September 2025 as a watershed moment, we're talking about a fundamental shift in how browsers talk to the hardware, right?
Exactly. We are talking about web GPU landing in every major browser, including Safari on iOS.
Oh, wow. That's huge.
Yeah. Web GPU bypasses those old JavaScript bottlenecks and allows the web browser to talk directly to the device's graphics card. Suddenly, browsers could handle massive matrix math, you know, the complex calculations required for modern 3D lighting and physics at near-native speeds.
That explains the explosion in 3D web frameworks, then. The author notes that 3.js, a major 3D library, saw its weekly downloads double to 5.4 million in just a year.
It's crazy. They even point out that Unreal 5's high-end Lyra multiplayer demo can run smoothly inside a web browser now.
Inside a browser? That's wild. So the graphics argument is effectively dead.
Leaving only the distribution ceiling. You know that old bias that browser games don't count unless they are packaged and sold on a platform like Steam or the iOS App Store?
But the delivery mechanism doesn't limit the platform anymore. Like, if you build a web game and you want it on Steam, you just wrap it in Electron.
Yeah. Let's unpack what that actually means for the end user, though. When you wrap a web game in Electron, you are essentially bundling a hidden, stripped-down Chromium web browser into a standalone .exe file.
Okay.
So the player clicks an icon on their desktop, the game launches in a window, and they have absolutely no idea they are fundamentally playing a web page.
That's brilliant. And the source highlights a game called Desktop Heroes to prove this point. It's this idle game built entirely in a web framework called Phaser by a tiny three-person team.
Yep.
They wrapped it in Electron, shipped it to Steam in October 2025, and found real commercial success. And if you want that same game on mobile, you use a similar wrapper called Capacitor.
And this is where the web environment becomes an absolute powerhouse for an AI copilot.
Because it's so text heavy.
That, and because web development has been the primary focus of the tech industry for a decade, it is exactly where AI tooling moves the fastest. It offers the ultimate fast feedback loop.
I mean, the Phaser game framework literally advertises on its GitHub page that every major frontier large language model was trained on its code base.
Yeah.
The maintainers even ship their repository with pre-built agent skills, which are like specific instructions tailored for AI coding assistants like Claude Code and Cursor.
The speed advantage is just undeniable. The source documents a developer who built a complex tower defense game called Tower of Time. We are talking about a 15,000-line code base.
15,000 lines.
Yeah. By leveraging Claude and Cursor within that web environment, the AI wrote 95% of the logic. The entire project took just 25 to 30 hours of human direction.
Wow.
And it was polished enough to score 4 stars at a public game jam.
So the web is incredible for speed and prototyping. But let's push back on this a bit, right? Because what if you don't want to rely on hidden browser wrappers? What if you want to build a massive, traditional, heavyweight game that runs natively on a PC or console, and you want to utilize the absolute bleeding edge of hardware?
Right. To do that, we have to examine the titans of the native game industry. We have to look at Unreal and Unity.
Okay, let's look at them.
And this is exactly where the premise of using an AI copilot hits a massive structural wall.
Which is funny, because you would expect these multi-billion dollar engines to be leading the AI revolution. Let's start with Unreal Engine.
Sure.
If your goal is pure film-grade realism, Unreal is the undisputed king. They have proprietary tech like Mannite for infinite polygon detail and Lumen for real-time global illumination.
Oh, the visual capabilities are staggering. The source mentions clarobscure. Expedition 33 is a prime example of a relatively small studio achieving mind-blowing AAA visuals thanks to Unreal 5. But the moment you shift your priority from, I want the best graphics, to, I want an AI to write the logic for me, Unreal reveals itself as the most hostile engine you could possibly choose.
Why is that? I mean, Unreal is famous for blueprints, right? That visual scripting system where developers just drag nodes around and connect them with wires to build logic.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a highly structured flowchart. Shouldn't an AI be able to map a flowchart incredibly easily?
Well, it would if that flowchart were saved as readable text. Under the hood, Unreal saves those blueprints as .offset files.
Right.
They are proprietary binary files. They're optimized for the engine's performance, not for human or AI readability.
Right, because a large language model operates by predicting the next text token based on semantic context. So
yeah.
If you feed it a compiled binary file, it's just looking at machine gibberish.
Exactly.
It has no semantic meaning to chew on. So the AI is completely blind to the visual logic of the game.
It's a massive known hurdle. The source actually cites a 2025 research paper where scientists wanted to train an AI on blueprints. Before they could even start the AI research, they had to spend months building a custom parser just to chew through 330,000 .offset files and translate them into something the AI could perceive.
Okay, wait. But Unreal doesn't just use blueprints. It uses C++ under the hood.
Right.
Can't you just tell the AI to ignore the visual nodes entirely and write the core game logic in pure C++ bay?
You'd think so, but Unreal C++ is not standard C++. It is heavily modified by custom reflection macros, things like UC class and U property.
Oh, right. So when you write C++ in Unreal, you aren't actually writing what the final compiler sees.
Precisely. Before the code compiles, a tool called the Unreal Header tool sweeps through, reads those custom macros, and injects thousands of lines of boilerplate code to handle garbage collection and editor integration.
Wow, that's complex.
Furthermore, Unreal utilizes the Gameplay Ability System, or GAS, which is a notoriously complex architecture. This creates an environment so weird and specific that the AI constantly loses its context and just hallucinates.
So the AI gets lost.
Completely. In 2026, NVIDIA published a technical blog post openly admitting that keeping AI agents on track inside Unreal C++ code bases is an unsolved problem.
Man, if NVIDIA says it's an unsolved problem, a solo developer doesn't stand a chance.
Not at all.
And we haven't even touched on the compile times. AI's entire advantage is iterative speed, right? It writes code, tests it, reads the error, and rewrites it in seconds.
Which is exactly why Unreal breaks the AI loop. The author notes that simply migrating a project from Unreal 4 to Unreal 5 caused one developer's cold compile time to jump from 20 minutes to between 50 and 70 minutes.
70 minutes. If an AI has to wait an hour to see if its bug fix actually worked, the iterative loop is completely dead. Really? You might as well write the code yourself at that point.
You really might as well.
Even Epic Games seems to know this, right? The built-in AI assistant they shipped for Unreal 5.7 in late 2025 is totally sandboxed. Can't read your project files, it can't execute editor commands. It's essentially just a chatbot bolted onto their documentation manual.
Yeah, so Unreal is pretty much out for an AI-heavy workflow, which brings us to Unity.
Okay, Unity.
Unity relies on standard C#, and the training data advantage here is unparalleled. There are well over a million Unity C# questions on Stack Overflow alone, which represents, you know, over a decade of human troubleshooting.
And the author actually praises Unity's code generation, don't they?
Yeah.
Like, for pure game logic, AI is incredibly steady in Unity.
It is.
They note that editor scripts generated by AI run perfectly on the first try almost 80% of the time. One developer even used AI to build a complete localization system in 8 minutes, a task that historically would take days.
The code generation is strong, yes. But writing a script is only half the battle in Unity.
Right.
The engine's fundamental workflow just fights the AI at every turn. I mean, think about how a human builds a game in Unity. You drag a 3D model into a scene, you visually wire a script to that model in the inspector panel, you drag a health bar UI element to a reference slot.
And a text-based AI agent cannot click and drag inside a visual editor.
Nope. But wait, aren't Unity's scene files saved as text? They use YAML, don't they?
They do use YAML, but those files are completely bloated with globally unique identifiers, or GIDs.
Oh, I see the problem. Large language models rely on semantic relationships, like The word player connects conceptually to the word health.
Exactly.
But a GID is just a random 32-character alphanumeric hash.
It strips away all the meaning. The source points out that a simple scene configuration that might take 10 clean lines of code in another engine takes over 60 lines of dense, unreadable ID references in Unity.
Wow.
It's like asking an AI to analyze a script where every actor's name has been replaced by a random string of numbers. The context window fills up with junk data, and the AI just loses the thread of the actual game architecture.
Not to mention the architectural bloat. I mean, Unity has evolved so much over the years that there are 4 or 5 different ways to handle basic events. You have Unity events, standard C# events, message buses.
Oh, yeah.
The AI is constantly guessing which specific architectural style your project is actually trying to use. And we cannot ignore the financial barrier either.
Right, the runtime fee saga.
Exactly. Following that highly controversial saga from 2023 and 2024, the cost of a Unity Pro license climbed to over $2,000 per seat per year.
Which is a massive hurdle for a solo developer or a hobbyist who just wants to experiment with AI agents. Because the AI can't read the visual scenes, the community workaround in Unity is incredibly clumsy.
It's terrible.
You have to ask the AI to write a temporary editor script, run that script to generate the scene visually, and then delete the script. It's a multi-step nightmare just to bypass the editor.
Right. So we have established that the web is incredibly fast, but constrained to browsers. Unreal is visually stunning, but locked in a binary black box. Unity has the code data, but a workflow that actively alienates text-based agents.
So where does that leave our solo developer?
It leaves them in what the source brilliantly calls the Godot Goldilocks zone.
The Godot Goldilocks zone. I love that.
Yeah, Godot wins this entire debate, and it wins based on one incredibly humble architectural decision.
Let me guess. Everything in Godot is plain text.
Everything in Godot is plain text.
The scene files, which use the .tscn extension, the resource files, the .tres files, they're all just clean, human-readable, semantic text.
And that is the ultimate unlock for an AI copilot. Because it's plain text, the AI can read the entire structure of your level directly. It can run a text diff to see exactly what changed.
That's huge.
It can edit the placement of enemies or the UI layout directly in the file with absolutely no conversion tools or custom parsers required.
Which Unity can't do cleanly, and Unreal can't do it all.
Right.
Furthermore, Godot is distributed under an MIT open source license.
Right.
It has over 100,000 stars on GitHub.
Which means the underlying C++ source code of the engine itself was scraped into the training data of every major frontier model.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, when you ask an AI to fix a bug in Godot, it isn't just guessing based on the surface-level API documentation. It literally understands the internal logic of how the engine renders a frame.
But the absolute killer feature, the moment in these field notes, where the true potential of AI game development clicks, is the concept of the autonomous loop.
Yes. Starting with version 4.0, Godot natively supported a deeply integrated --- headless mode.
Headless mode.
Yeah.
Which means the engine can boot up and run the entire game in the background without dedicating any resources to drawing the graphics on a monitor, right?
Right.
Why is that specific feature so revolutionary for an AI?
Because it allows the AI to self-heal.
Self-heal.
Yeah, think about it. The AI writes a script for a new player mechanic. Using the Model Context Protocol, or MCP, the AI acts as an agent. It launches the game itself in headless mode.
Okay.
The new code causes the game to crash. The engine generates a text-based error log. The AI reads that error log, realizes it missed a variable, rewrites its own syntax, and launches the game again.
And creates a closed, autonomous testing loop.
Mm.
That is wild.
Completely autonomous.
Putting an AI inside Unreal Engine is kind of like asking a painter to create a masterpiece in a pitch-black room. They can't see the canvas, they can't see the paint. Godot turns the lights on. It gives the AI a mirror to check its own work, realize it made a mistake, and correct it before it ever even bothers the human developer.
Exactly. And the open source community has built an entire ecosystem around this exact capability. By 2025 and 2026, tools like the Godot MCP server exploded in popularity, gathering nearly 4,000 stars.
Wow.
There is an agent framework called GoPeak that ships with over 90 features specifically designed for this loop.
90 features.
Yeah, it allows the AI to set debug breakpoints, simulate mouse clicks to test menus, and even take visual screenshots of the game to verify its work before moving on.
And it does all of this incredibly fast because the Godot editor is remarkably lightweight. It's, what, roughly a 50 megabyte megabyte download.
Compare that to Unity's 2 gigabyte footprint, or Unreal, which starts at a massive 50 gigabytes.
Yeah.
When your AI agent is launching and closing the engine dozens of times a minute to autonomously test code, that lightweight footprint translates to iteration cycles measured in seconds rather than hours.
But there is always a lingering doubt when discussing open source engines, isn't there? Like, can an engine that is only a 50 megabyte download actually carry a massive commercial success?
The industry data from early 2026 put that doubt to rest permanently, honestly.
Really?
Yeah. Slay the Spire 2, one of the most highly anticipated sequels in the indie space, migrated its entire development from Unity to Godot.
I remember that.
When the game hit early access in March 2026, it peaked at roughly 570,000 concurrent players.
Over 500,000 players hammering the engine simultaneously without issue.
The broader metric is just as compelling, too. Over a 2-year span, Godot's presence on Steam skyrocketed from 618 shipped games to nearly 3,000.
That's a huge jump.
The narrative that Godot is strictly for hobbyists just cannot survive contact with that data.
We have spent a lot of time breaking down why Godot is the perfect environment for an AI co-pilot. But we need to ground this conversation in reality.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want you listening to walk away thinking you can just sit back with a microphone, describe a sprawling RPG to your computer, and have an AI spit out the next Skyrim by Monday morning.
No, that's a complete fantasy, and the author of the field notes is very careful to manage expectations regarding the current limits of AI. They point to the 2026 Game Developers Conference survey, which provides a very sobering look at actual adoption rates.
Right. The stats were, 81% of surveyed developers reported using AI for research and brainstorming. 47% use it for localized code assistance, like asking it to write a specific sorting algorithm.
Yep.
But only 5% actually trust the AI enough to let it touch player-facing features directly.
Only 5%. And that metric highlights how fragile AI architecture still is. The source specifically warns against the trend of vibe coding.
Vibe coding, right.
It's the attempt to build a complex software project from a blank slate simply by describing the vibe to an AI model. It almost universally fails.
The author mentions a developer who spent 20 to 30 iterative attempts just trying to force an AI to build a reliable drag-and-drop inventory mechanic from scratch before finally just giving up in frustration.
An LLM is a text prediction engine, right? It handles contained, localized logic beautifully, but it completely stalls out when asked to design complex foundational architecture, like an interconnected state machine for enemy behavior.
So the crucial shift in perspective is realizing that AI is a multiplier, not a magic wand.
Exactly. It multiplies the skills of a developer who already understands how to build the scaffolding.
If you, the human, can architect the foundation and define the data structures, the AI can build out the individual rooms of that house incredibly fast, but it cannot pour the concrete foundation for you based on a voice command.
The source also acknowledges one specific historical trap regarding Godot that developers need to be aware of, though.
Oh, what's that?
Back in March 2023, Godot 4.0 launched, and it introduced a massive overhaul to the engine's core API.
Which creates the exact same problem we saw with Bevy earlier. The AI models were trained heavily on the old Godot 3.0 syntax, so they would confidently suggest deprecated code.
Exactly, but the author notes that this specific gap has rapidly closed.
Oh, good.
Yeah, if you are using a modern frontier model, basically anything post Opus 4.5, and you provide it with a solid project context file, it rarely trips over the 4.0 API changes anymore.
Okay, we've covered an immense amount of ground today. Let's synthesize the ultimate takeaway. If you are sitting down at your computer tonight, determined to build a game with an AI co-pilot, your choice of engine is a spectrum based entirely on your end goals.
That's the perfect way to look at it. If your absolute priority is iteration speed, rapid prototyping, and the frictionless ability to text a playable link to a friend you stay on the web,
right.
Use Phaser and TypeScript. WebGPU has effectively removed the graphical limits, and the browser remains the fastest feedback loop for AI agents.
But if your goal is pure, uncompromising, factorial AAA graphics, and those graphics are the core selling point of your product, you really have to choose Unreal Engine.
Yep, you do.
But you have to go in accepting that the AI is going to be a highly limited C++ sidekick. It simply cannot carry the heavy lifting of the game's logic because it cannot read those binary blueprints.
And finally, if your goal is to build a proper native desktop game that you can ship commercially on Steam, and you want the AI to autonomously handle the vast majority of the coding workload, Godot is the undisputed winner.
Because choosing an engine for AI isn't about finding the platform with the most historical data. It's about choosing the engine that actually gives the AI eyes.
I like that.
Godot's architecture flattens your entire project into clean, semantic, plain text that an AI agent can read, understand, and fix autonomously through a headless loop. Whereas Unreal, by prioritizing performance over readability, locks your logic in a beautiful binary black box.
Which leaves us with a truly fascinating question, I think, that extends far beyond the realm of video game development.
Oh, really? Like what?
Well, if we now know that plain text visibility and an autonomous testing loop are the ultimate keys to unlocking AI productivity, what other software industries out there are secretly handicapping themselves right now?
Oh, wow. Think about the massive enterprise tools we use every day.
Right.
How many industry standard design programs, video editors, or architectural CAD suites lock their users' data inside proprietary binary black boxes, just like Unreal's .asset files.
Are we on the precipice of a massive plain text revolution?
I mean, we might be.
Will we see entirely new ecosystems of creative software emerge, not because they have better features for humans, but simply because their file formats are fully readable by AI agents?
The future of software isn't just about making the AI smarter. It's about tearing down the black boxes so the AI can actually see what we're trying to build.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Hopefully the next time you dream about building that game, the path forward is a lot clearer. We'll catch you next time.